Hi everyone, John Steele here. Just before you listen to JTET for this week, as I was finishing editing the pod, the news broke that Masato Kudo, Miyazaki striker, had unbelievably passed away at the age of 32. So James and I didn't know about this when we were recording the sections of the pod earlier. So if it sounds, you know, kind of uncharacteristically upbeat or too jovial, apologies for that. We didn't know that obviously the news was going to break, but we'll talk more about him on the pod next week, I'm sure. But for now, yeah, rest in peace, Masato Kudo. Thanks for the goals and the memories, and we'll give him a more fitting tribute on the pod next week. But please enjoy the show, and apologies again if the tone doesn't sound quite right. Everything was recorded before the news broke. Okay, talk to you soon. And welcome to J-Talk Extra Time. All of the latest J2 and J3 news is coming up as usual. John Steele here in the host's chair this week, but I'm joined by a breakout star of the big J-Talk podcast recently. It's James Taylor. James, how are you doing?
All right, thanks, John. That's the second time in 2 weeks I've been referred to as a breakout star. It's good for my ego. It's been a momentous weekend for J2 teams, hasn't it? So we've got lots to talk about tonight.
Yes, very much so. Yes, but James, you overcame the difficult second album brilliantly, I thought, on the big pod this week. But now I'm going to have to start talking you down so that it doesn't become a permanent thing. So hope you understand. Hope you understand. Yes.
Yeah, I understand. Okay. Yeah.
Well, since we're talking about the big pod, James, there's only one place we can really start our chat this week. And as we were talking about in the green room beforehand, there was so much football going on Sunday, especially, that it was hard to kind of keep track of what was going on. But we better talk about the Emperor's Cup final at Nissan Stadium. It was Kofu 1, J2's own Vanfire Kofu 1, Hiroshima 1 after 120 minutes. But Kofu then won 5-4 on penalties. I'm sure most listeners know this already, but it does bear repeating, I think. Just astonishing stuff from Kofu, James, who were brilliant in the first half especially. They had an early chance to take the lead through Motoki Hasegawa, but he shot too close to Hiroshima's keeper Keisuke Osako. But in the 26th minute, there was no reprieve for the J1 side. Hiroshima were sluggish and kind of slow defending a corner, and Hasegawa played in Sho Araki, who cut the ball back for the Afro Samurai cosplayer Kazushi Mitsuhira to score. A really, really good finish from him. And things nearly got better for Kofu in the second half. Willian Lira rattling the crossbar from about 30 yards with a strike that would surely have won it for Kofu. And they got within 6 minutes of lifting the cup, didn't they, when Hiroshima levelled with a superb rising drive from Takumu Kawamura, which was too hot for Kohei Kawata to handle in the Kofu goal. Going into extra time, and there was a scare for Kofu right at the start when a free kick from Makoto Mitsuda came back off the crossbar. And there was more nerve-jangling terror for Kofu supporters as they conceded a penalty with just 4 minutes of the second half of extra time to go, the ball hitting the hand of veteran defender Hideomi Yamamoto, who'd only come on as a sub about 4 minutes earlier. But the drama just kept going, James. Mitsuda's spot kick was brilliantly saved by Kawata, diving low to his right. So yes, 1-1 at full time at the end of extra time. So the penalty shootout came along. All the penalties were scored apart from Hiroshima's fourth kick from Kawamura, which was saved by Kawata getting down low to his left. And then the veteran defender Yamamoto had the crucial fifth penalty for Kofu. And talk about ice cold. He put it right in the top corner. And Kofu were champions. So astonishing stuff, James. Obviously, I know listeners can go to the big pod and get a much more in-depth kind of a review of the final, I think. But how are you feeling about it, sort of, you know, 3 days on?
Still pretty excited about it. I think it's amazing. Now it's hard to believe. I'm not even a Colford supporter, but it's still hard to believe that, that Colford went and won the Emperor's Cup. They beat five J1 teams on their way to doing it. I was really pleased that they came out to play their way as much as they could, and they seemed pretty unperturbed by the big stage or by the J1 opponent. And I think actually that ended up putting more pressure on Hiroshima. They would have already had pressure being the favourites, everyone expecting them to win, and of the potential embarrassment if they couldn't beat a struggling J2 team. And then Colford scoring first as well would have only increased that pressure. And I think Hiroshima really struggled to deal with it. And it was only towards the end of the 90 minutes that they actually were able to have any real impact on the game. What did you think? Because people, like you said, they've already heard me talk about it. What did you think?
Yeah, well, I feel a little bit embarrassed because we had a kind of we were texting before the match, sort of talking about this pod actually, and saying like, well, there might not be that much to talk about. You know, Hiroshima might be 2-0 up inside the first 10 minutes, and then we just give this game a kind of cursory 1 or 2 line mention on the pod this week. But yeah, the way the game went, I mean, I didn't get to watch it. This is kind of a slightly off topic, but just the way that the cup's been scheduled this season generally has been pretty pretty annoying or pretty poor, I think, from the JFA. This might be a topic we can go into more detail another time. But basically, this game kicked off at 2 p.m. On Sunday, right at the same time as a lot of very important J2 games. And I was on my way, sort of during this game, I was on my way to Mitsuzawa for the Yokohama FC match in J2, which was kicking off at 6. So, yeah, I wasn't really across this game as much as I would have liked to be, really. But I watched the first half at home. And one thing I did notice was kind of they had the cameras like on the players, sort of not quite in the tunnel, but like, I don't know, they didn't really have a tunnel at Nissan, right? The players just kind of milling around at the edge of the pitch before coming on. Kofu players look very relaxed, laughing and joking. You know, they're obviously sort of kind of Denmark at Euro 92 kind of vibe, being sort of happy to be there and, you know, just like you said, to play their own football and enjoy the occasion. And yeah, enjoy it they did. Like you said, they imposed themselves on the game. They played well. And I think you mentioned it too. We are not Kofu supporters, and they've not been the best watch in J2 this season, to say the least. But it's absolutely brilliant to see a team from our division, if you like, you know, doing so well on a big stage. I just think it's a shame in some ways it wasn't the traditional like New Year's Day final, you know, with all of the attention on it. Because, as I say, my attention was sort of divided between this game and J2 games on the same day. And I think perhaps a lot of people in the same situation. I mean, I didn't really catch up with all of this drama about kind of that penalty at the end of extra time, etc. That was all I caught up on that with that on highlights afterwards, you know. So yeah, it's kind of a bittersweet in some ways because I think Kofu are going to get the plaudits and the attention, but I think they should have had more because I think this should have been like this game should have been like the only game of the weekend, full stop. You know, not just no J1, but should have been no other games. But yeah, you know, it's a funny year this year calendar wise, so perhaps there's nothing that could be done about that. But yeah, congratulations to Kofu, fantastic stuff, and you can't help sort of enjoying the kind of you know, Twitter gifs of like the old man with the flag, you know, having a good time. And also there's a funny video of the I don't know the names of the Kofu mascots, but the female mascot just kind of sinking to her knees like when that winning penalty goes in from Yamamoto. So yeah, really, really kind of good, good old fashioned football vibes, I think, all round from the match. And I think for Hiroshima it's not too bad because don't they have the Levan Cup final coming up this weekend?
Yes.
So they get another chance to win in a final a week later, which is pretty rare. So yeah, hope they can do well in that game. James, one thing we can add to the chat that you had with Ben and Sam on the Big Pod earlier this week, there was a lot of discussion about Tatsuma Yoshida, the Kofu boss, whether he would be, you know, still in charge of the team for their, you know, next season in J2 and then the ACL, obviously, that they have coming up. But we can sort of, you know, we've seen now, it's been announced officially, he's not going to be back. He's standing down or he's leaving at the end of this season. How surprised are you about that? Do you think that makes sense considering that the league season has been very disappointing?
Yeah, I'm a bit surprised. I mean, I thought that the fact that he won the Emperor's Cup would have given him a bit more, would have bought him a bit more time, would have let him sort of see in the start of next season and see how it goes. But on the other hand, not so surprised, because they're 18th. They've been pretty terrible for the second half of this year, or in fact for most of the year really. They've been not very good, and it makes sense that if rather than letting him sort the squad out, spend their prize money and start next season, if it goes badly like it has this season, they have to get rid of him and bring someone else in. It makes more sense to replace him now, and or at the end of the season, and then let a new manager come in and build the squad that he wants. So yeah, kind of surprising, but kind of not surprising. I could see both sides of it. What did you think about it?
Yeah, I think perhaps we are both reaching the stage in our lives with football where nothing is that surprising nowadays, right? Like people getting fired or people being rehired isn't that kind of eyebrow raising. Yeah, I don't know. I think J-League teams tend to be more loyal to the coaches than in other countries, I think it's fair to say. So I wondered if winning the Emperor's Cup would be enough to kind of keep him, keep Tatsumiyoshi doing the job for a bit longer. But I suppose, the things that are counted against him are that there's a huge gap now, right, between, because of the World Cup, the J-League season's finishing early. So there's like 3 months. Pretty much until the league starts up again. So it's like you said, that's plenty of time for a new manager to come in and impose himself on a new squad. And as you mentioned on Big Pod, the ACL itself doesn't start until August, right? The group stage doesn't start until August. So, I mean, there's no guarantee that even if they'd kept, I think if they'd kept Yoshida on but started the new season poorly, he would have been out anyway. So, perhaps it makes sense. And I mean, I think it's a good indicator that Kofu see themselves as, in inverted commas, a big club or a J1 club, so that they're perhaps not. I kind of admire the drive of not being satisfied with just winning a cup. And, I think they are looking at the bigger picture of like, it's brilliant that they've won the cup, but the league form and the results been pretty disappointing this year. So perhaps it's kind of a good thing that they're not settling, but we'll wait to see who they get in. I suppose that's the interesting thing, isn't it? A lot of managers are going to be available, right, very soon. It's going to be interesting. Yeah, we'll see how things turn out. But for now, I think they still have Tatsumi Yoshida for one more game, right? The last game of the season coming up, so he can kind of bask in the glory of as we said, just an astonishing kind of run to the final. And a glorious victory for Kofu. So yeah, well done to Kofu again. And hope they enjoy that, because it's not a J2 side winning the Emperor's Cup does not happen very often, right? So yeah, fantastic stuff. As I said, well done to all involved. Right, James, I think we could easily fill a pod on Kofu this week, but we better not. We better move on, if that's okay. We should talk about our bread and butter, if you like, where Kofu have kind of fallen down a bit this season. That's J2, the second division. So as well as the Emperor's Cup final on Sunday, there was lots of questions were answered in J2 at the weekend, weren't they, in round 41. So we'll try and sort of wrap these up as neatly as we can. We're going to pick three of the bigger games or the kind of most, the games that provided the most clarity from the weekend to talk about. Let's start at City Light Stadium. It finished Okayama 1, Akita 2. Now, that's a result that means Okayama are heading for the playoffs, and they'll definitely have a home game in the first round. They're going to finish third, and second place Yokohama FC, they're now promoted. They're back in J1, and this is before they even played their game against Kanazawa, because this match was at 2 p.m, the same time as the Emperor's Cup final. So, no goals in the first half here. But Okayama did hit the front straight after half-time. Thiago Alves found some space down the Okayama right, and he picked out Yosuke Kawai on the edge of the penalty area, and Kawai just kind of caressed the ball past Yudai Tanaka's right hand and into the bottom corner. So Okayama were 1-0 up in the 50th minute, and of course they had to win this game to keep their automatic promotion hopes alive. Akita, though, they're ending the season in searing form, aren't they? They just can't be counting out at the moment at all. And they were level 10 minutes later thanks to some lightning pace from Keita Saito. He was sent racing clear by Shota Aoki's clever through ball, and he powered a shot past Daiki Hotta in the Okayama goal to make it 1-1. Okayama had to go for it after that, and they did, but there was no way through. I think we should give some credit to Akita centre-back Kaito Chida. He took a fierce drive right in the breadbasket, which looked very painful as part of his defensive duties. And then, you know, in the 93rd minute, the third minute of stoppage time, the almost inevitable happened as Akita scored a winner. Aoki was left completely free on the edge of the six-yard box, and he turned in a low right-wing cross from Daiki Kogure. It's probably worth mentioning at this point, Aoki was born in Kanagawa, and he has played a couple of spells at Yokohama FC in the past. So perhaps Agent Aoki was activated for this game. But it finished Okayama 1, Akita 2. Four straight wins for Akita, who are in 12th and are ending the season in a stupendous fashion, it's fair to say. And for Okayama, I think this is quite a deflating defeat, but they do still have the playoffs and home game in the playoffs to look forward to. James, Okayama 1, Akita 2, what did you think?
Well, I said last week, I think that Akita would enjoy trying to play the spoiler, and they did. They did it perfectly, and they ended Okayama's top two hopes. Another disappointing result for Okayama. A couple of weeks ago, they lost to Kanazawa. Again, they probably should have won. You know, if you're looking to finish in the top two, you've got to be beating teams like Kanazawa. And I'd say the same here. Akita are not a bad team, but if you're looking to finish in the top two, you should be beating mid-table teams like Akita, even if they are on a good run of form. So I think, and the fact that Okayama were ahead as well, but let it slip, is going to be really disappointing for them. And whether they can, you know, brush that off in time for the playoffs will be interesting to see, because it looks like they are going to finish third, and whoever finishes sixth, it's going to be someone probably who's on a good run of form. So I mean, we'll come to that in a couple of weeks, I suppose, but these kind of missteps from Okayama could derail their much awaited promotion hopes, because they haven't been in this situation before, finishing this high up, have they? I thought for their goal, it was a little bit surprising that Akita gave Thiago Alves so much space. And he was able to pass for Kawai, and Kawai was given a lot of space as well. I say it's surprising because Akita, I think of them as a very good defensive team. And they are, generally. And they did put in a good defensive effort here. And you mentioned that shot block that ended up with the player down for a few minutes to recover. That's the sort of thing that Akita are really good at. They work together as a team, and they put their bodies on the line when they're in defence. And then they somehow manage to make things happen up front. They don't have, we've said it before, I don't want to be this disparaging, but they don't have the kind of flair players that other teams can call on. But they do have a lot of hard workers, and that's what got their goals, really, especially the second one. They didn't give up right at the end, and Aoki was in a little bit of space because Yanagi and Shunpei Naruse both failed to do anything about the fact that he was standing on his own in between them, and meant he had a bit of a tap in there. So I think Akita, they know what they're good at, and they keep doing it, and that's why they're on four wins in a row. They're in 12th. They could finish in the top half, which would be fantastic. And I think we could say that this is another successful season for them. I think a slight improvement on last year as well. And interesting as well, they went on a 13-game winless run or something like that in this season. And still, they never really dipped into relegation trouble. So I think it's really, really good. I think Ken Yoshida's done another good job there. The only thing to wonder about is, can they just keep doing what they're doing? Because they haven't really changed the tactics much from last year. And he doesn't change his team very much from week to week, from what I can tell. So I wonder if they're reaching the ceiling of what they can do. Can they evolve tactically? Does he want to change tactics? And if for Akita to evolve, what would that entail? But maybe this is something to talk about in the season reviews.
No, I think that's a nice trailer for season review pods. Yeah, and I think, you know, just looking at the league table right now, it looks like Akita are going to end up finishing not a million miles away from the top six, right? They might end up being about 8, 9, let's for argument's sake call it 10 points off the playoffs. It's an interesting discussion to think about how could they squeeze an extra 10 points out of the resources that they have available, which you have to imagine would be Ken Yoshida's plan. He seems to have, like you said, a system and players that he likes to work with. No interest really in loaning players from J1 into the team. Pretty much no interest in foreign players at all, from what I can make out. And Martin Spivey, our kind of Akita correspondent on Twitter, has made this point many times. So, yeah, how much more juice is there to squeeze out of the orange there is an interesting question. But I feel the same as you. You mentioned the word disparaging. Like we kind of don't give Akita enough credit, but it's almost because we end up kind of repeating the same plaudits again and again because they don't change that much. So our praise doesn't change much either. But I think the fact that they've just become an established mid-table J2 side with almost no fanfare whatsoever, and when you look at the league table, you almost look through them or you don't notice them, that is, in a way, that sounds like a backhanded compliment, but it's not an easy thing to do, you know, to come into J2 and just establish yourself, you know, the first time Vasking, you know, obviously Iwate found it's not that easy this year. We'll talk about them later. So, yeah, credit to Akita because they... It isn't an accident that they keep getting these results, right? It's like you said, it's hard work, it's organisation, and I think that has a lot of merits as well. So we shouldn't we should try and big them up and hype them up a little bit more. I think on Okayama, it's strange how expectation plays a part in these things, isn't it? I think if you'd said at the start of the season you're going to finish third, I think your hand would have been snapped off. But the fact that they've got so close and carried it until just the last two rounds to still have a tilt at the top two, you could see the players looking a bit disappointed and deflated at the end of the match. So it'll be interesting to see if that carries on into the playoffs. You know, historically, the team that finishes third does have a bit of a hangover going into the playoff games. But I think that's usually predicated on the fact that they've missed out on automatic promotion on the last day. Whereas Okayama have now got like 2 weeks to get over it, basically, before the playoffs. So I think in a weird way, this might not turn out to be the worst defeat in the world from their point of view. Because if they can clear their heads and maybe work out some frustration in the last game, then going to the playoffs sort of, you know, with a clean palate and refreshed, then I don't think anyone's going to look forward to going to the City Light Stadium and playing against them. You know, they've been a really good team all season, and they just, I think, felt the pressure a little bit, and they came up against an Akita team who are just red hot, you know, going into the tail end of the season. So, yeah, if anybody hasn't yet, the DAZN documentary on Okayama, you know, DAZN in Japan have got this three-part documentary series on Okayama that's just started. Only the first episode's out now, but I watched it before the weekend's games, and it's really good kind of context provider for kind of their situation, you know, coming up as a kind of professional football team without any kind of big corporate backer. I think they pretty much, you know, started from scratch. So from that point of view, you know, finishing third in J2 is a momentous achievement for the club. So yeah, I hope the players aren't too despondent. I think they've done the club proud this year, and I have a feeling that they will be, you know, ready to go again in the playoffs in a week or two's time. All right, James. I think we've been relentlessly positive about two teams there. So, yeah, let's move on before people start turning off because it's too positive and it's boring. So, yeah, as mentioned, that defeat for Okayama meant that first of all, Niigata were crowned champions. Almost forgetting that because of all the other things that went on over the weekend. So, congratulations to Niigata, promoted already, but now they're officially champions as well. Yokohama FC are going to finish second, so they join Niigata in J1 for next year. But their sort of promotion party was spoiled by Kanazawa on Sunday evening in a pulsating game at Mitsuzawa. It finished Yokohama FC 2, Kanazawa 3. And I don't really know where to start here, James, so I'll do my best and you can fill in the blanks for me. Early on, both sides had chances. Sven Brodersen was back in goal for Yokohama. He had to make a save with his legs from Hiroya Matsumoto inside the opening 10 minutes. And at the other end, Yuto Shirai in the Kanazawa goal had to push a pile driver from Kosuke Saito over the bar. But Yokohama were sloppy at the back and they had a couple of warnings that they needed to improve. Taiga Son had a header that he put over the bar from a corner. And Kyohei Sugiura with another header that he flashed just wide of the far post was another chance for Kanazawa. Yokohama didn't heed the warnings though. And in the 31st minute, their luck ran out. Takumi Nakamura, who had a pretty poor game in the right centre-back position for the home side, he headed a long ball just up into the air inside his own penalty area rather than away. And the ball dropped nicely for Sugiura to volley past Brodersen and make it 1-0 to Kanazawa. That gave the visitors a lot of confidence and they shredded the Yokohama backline again to make it 2-0 just 3 minutes later. This time Sugiura was the provider. He crossed low for Masamichi Hayashi to convert at close range. Then right at the start of the second half, it was suddenly 3-0. Brodersen made a bad mistake, spilling Hayashi's shot from outside the box. This came after a lovely flick to Hayashi from Sugiura. And Hiroya Matsumoto was following in and scored the rebound inside the six-yard box. So suddenly, Kanazawa 3-0 up in the 46th minute at Mitsuzawa. At that point, I think Yokohama realised they were actually in a game. And the introduction of Kleber from the bench and Ryoya Yamashita made a big difference. Kleber finally got Yokohama back into the game in the 66th minute. He tapped in a low cross from Tatsuya Hasegawa at the far post. Then suddenly, the pendulum seemed to swing Yokohama's way. The Kanazawa captain, Keita Fujimura, was shown a second yellow card after a tussle with Yamashita. I thought this was a bit harsh, but the second yellow card came out and he was sent off. That was in the 71st minute, and there was a double punishment for Kanazawa because from the resulting free kick, Kleber rose highest and he powered a superb header past Shirai. That made it 3-2 and the comeback was on. It was attack versus defence for the rest of the game though. Kleber was inches away from completing his hat-trick with another header that came off the crossbar in the 83rd minute. Kleber was actually injured. He got a knock to the face going up for this header and he had to go off and couldn't come back on. Yokohama had already used all five subs, so with no more subs available, the game ended 10 versus 10. Right at the death, in the 6 minute of stoppage time, Shirai made a brilliant one-handed save from a Shunsuke Nakamura header. We should mention he was on the pitch at this point as well. And Yamashita somehow failed to connect with the rebound. I think the defender, Honi Ashoji, did just enough to put him off. So there was an amazing let-off for Kanazawa right at the end. But it finished Yokohama FC 2, Kanazawa 3. It was Kanazawa's night, and deservedly so, but I think we have to give both sets of players credit. It was a pulsating and brilliant game. And Yokohama will now prepare for J1 life in 2023, but they'll be doing that without Shunsuke Nakamura, the veteran 44-year-old and legend of the Japanese game. It's been announced officially he's going to retire at the end of the season. So we got to see one of his final performances, James, I think. James, this was a pretty difficult game to kind of pare down into notes, really. But what did you make of it?
Well, yeah, it was very exciting, wasn't it? And it seemed like a good crowd as well. I thought 8,000 or so. It was the second biggest home attendance of the season for Yokohama FC, so that was good. And I know that they'd already had promotion confirmed, but they could have still gone for the title. So with that knowledge, I thought this was a really underwhelming performance from them. But in the first half, I was really surprised at how flat they were, defensively very shaky and offensively uninspired. They had plenty of shots in the first half, but most of them were from the edge of the area and were straight at Yuto Shirai, except for one chance that Saito had from inside the area. A really powerful shot. He volleyed it. He connected with it perfectly. And Shirai had to make a really, really good save to tip it over. But that was really all that Yokohama did in the first half in terms of their attack. I think Kanazawa did well to keep them at bay. And yes, Sugiura, Hayashi, Matsumoto and Ryuhei Oishi stretched Yokohama's defence really well in all directions. They were really good and defence really struggled. And Sugiura got another goal, another assist. He's got 7 goals and 7 assists now this year. And interestingly, of the games in which he has scored or assisted this season, Kanazawa have not lost. 8 wins and 4 draws when Sugiura is involved directly in a goal, which I think is quite illustrative of his importance. I think it's understated importance, actually, as a member of this team, someone who whether he's coming off the bench or whether he's starting, he can produce. He'll produce something for the team. And Hayashi's got 13 goals now, which is the best for Teigen since Mutsuki Kato got 13 in 2020. Hiroya Matsumoto, 8 goals and 2 assists. He was the September MVP for J2. And his goal came from Sugiura's flick and Hayashi's shot. So again, showing how well those guys are working together at the moment. It's really exciting to watch Kanazawa attack. And I think at first I thought, oh, Sven Brodersen had a bit of an off night, but in his defense didn't work for him. It was only the third goal that was completely his mistake, but the first and the second goals he had to try and do something after the defense had not done their jobs. So I think I was a bit harsh originally with my thinking about that, and I cut him a bit of slack. He did well, with bearing in mind what was in front of him, and what the frustrating thing about supporting Kanazawa is that, you know, you score 3 goals and you're still clinging on at the end. So typical Kanazawa. We've done that a lot recently. But with Kanazawa were holding on well. Even Yokohama were starting to exert pressure in the second half. It was 3-0. Kanazawa were holding on well until everyone just switched off. And then Clever was left all alone to tap in from a few yards. That happens at least once every game. It's 18 games now. Kanazawa have not kept a clean sheet. It's really frustrating. And that's why, even more so this season than in previous seasons, I watch Kanazawa games, and every time the opposition attacks, I have a sinking feeling that they're going to score. And I'm kind of a nervous, pessimistic supporter anyway, but this year that feeling has been even stronger with our defence. And I thought for Fujimura's 2 yellows, I thought they were both yellows. And I think they were both unnecessary. He didn't need to commit either of those fouls. I'm surprised actually he hasn't had more of these kind of double bookings, because he does do that sort of thing a lot. And it really just made the situation worse. We're already on the back foot, and going down a man was the last thing we wanted. But even after conceding that second goal from that free kick, I thought the last-ditch defending from Kanazawa was really, really good. The combination of good defending, amazing goalkeeping, a bit of luck with the goal frame, and some poor finishing as well. I think Koki Ogawa had a few good-headed chances that he kind of fluffed, really. And yeah, I think. I didn't realize it was 10 against 10. I was so engrossed in it, but I just assumed that it was 11 versus 10, because even after Kleber went off and didn't come back on, the flow of the game didn't change. It was still all Yokohama just camping out on the edge of Kanazawa's area and peppering Shirai with shots and putting in crosses for the defense to clear. It was pretty funny. I hadn't realized until you'd said that a few minutes ago. But yeah, I know I'll give credit to the likes of Naoki Sato and Riku Matsuda, who just kept running all the way to the end of the game, up and down. They were knackered, but they kept going. Honoya Shoji, Taiga Son did pretty well for the most part as central defenders. getting in the way of things or getting their head on crosses and things like that. So I think, yeah, really great result for Kanazawa, and a really exciting game. And it, I think if I were a Yokohama FC supporter, I would be, or of course I'd be disappointed they lost. And disappointed that they didn't, you know, missing out on a chance for the title, but in the end it doesn't matter because they're going back up to J1 and it's really hard to go straight back up, isn't it?
Oh well, yeah. Well, I haven't done my own research because that's passé nowadays with the advent of Twitter. But I did read some interesting tweets from someone who has, I think, done the number crunching on this in Japanese. I don't have the name of the account that I stole this from, but I did retweet it. So if anybody goes back through my tweets, they'll find it. But I think, yeah, the stat that I read was, I think 53 teams in total have been relegated to J2 since the relegation was introduced, and only 19 of them have gone back up at the first time of asking. So it's about 35%, 36% rate. So for Yokohama FC to be in that group is pretty good. And on top of that, I forgot to tell you this when we were chatting before, but I think of teams that have gone straight back up to J1 in second place, none of them have been relegated the following season. So obviously, I'm not celebrating Yokohama FC's safety and survival just yet, because statistics are not, you know, not something that necessarily predict future results entirely accurately. But yeah, I think it was a weird game in the sense that both sets of supporters would be kind of happy at the end. Obviously, great win for Kanazawa, although it was perhaps a bit, bums were squeaking a bit more than they should have been by full time. And for Yokohama FC, they've lost the game, but you know, promotion was achieved, so that's a kind of happy ending for everyone. But I think from a Yokohama FC point of view, yeah, they basically threw away the first half of the game, so it's very difficult to then turn around and say you're disappointed that you haven't got any points because you only played for one half. And I think perhaps on Kanazawa's side it might be the other way around, that they were sort of on top and cruising for the first 50 minutes, and then when the pendulum swung the other way, they didn't fold and they didn't crack. So I'm not going to say that because that's not accurate, but they certainly wobbled more than, you know, it was literally like we were saying, that the width of the goal frame and perhaps one, if Ryo Yamashita's studs had been slightly longer or he was slightly taller, you know, it would have been 3-3 and there'd be even more goals for us to talk about. But yeah, it can't take anything away from Kanazawa. Their football was scintillating at times in the first half, and they definitely did enough and deserved to win that game. And Yokohama FC, one thing that is worrying is they, I don't know how much you've been across this, James, but all of their kind of promotion merchandise, which, by the way, was unveiled suspiciously quickly, you know, before the kickoff. You know, I was receiving emails from the sort of, you know, automated mailer that this stuff was available, and they've got like "We are back" is the slogan, but "back" is in inverted commas.
Well, I know where that is, because then when they get relegated from J1, they can use the same stuff.
That's right. Just cross out the inverted commas. Like we're just back. It's like, well, yeah. It's like, how long are you planning to stay? Like, are you back? It's like, you know when, like, you know, are you out or are you out? You know, are you tired or are you tired? So
are you,
yeah,
busy or are you?
Yeah, I'm just not really sure why that's happened, but yeah, they did do that Tokyo Verde thing of like the, so for disclosure, the Okayama Akita game was at 2 p.m. So me and my son, we were lining up to go into the stadium at Mitsuzawa at the time that game was finishing. So there was a big roar from inside when Akita got that last minute winner that meant that Yokohama were promoted. But and then yeah, literally I got the. Well, they were giving away at the entrance, they were giving away sort of back to J1 t-shirts for the first kind of 10,000 people. So again, it's tempting fate in a way which I wasn't entirely comfortable with. But then, yeah, they got all this merchandise, like obviously like ready to go. So, yeah, I don't know whether to kind of take my hat off to the slick marketing machine or, you know, wonder at where modern football has brought us to. But, yeah, if you want any sort of amusingly grammatical promotion goods. Yokohama FC is the place to be, I think, at the moment. So, but yeah, it was a fantastic game, and I think we could again we could talk for another half an hour and not do it justice. So perhaps we won't do that. But yeah, anyone who wants to check out the highlights can do. And I still haven't mentioned, I bumped into friend of the pod, Victor, JJ Football Analytics, after the game. He's in Japan at the moment, sort of touring J League Stadium, meeting up with people from our little community, and it was really good to meet him in person and chat. And I think there's sort of tentative plans. I'll meet him again later this week, and I think he's coming to see you, right, at the weekend. So
yeah, he's coming to the Kanazawa Tochigi game on Sunday, so hopefully I'll be able to meet up with him as well.
Exciting times. And he was wearing a Keita Fujimura uniform with a number 8, but I didn't didn't receive any abuse that I saw, and I know Yokohama FC fans trying to get at him. So yeah, it was all very friendly, all very amicable. So yeah, fantastic stuff.
Before we go on, this game was on the international YouTube channel, J League's international YouTube channel. I don't know how long they keep the games up after the broadcast, but if anyone's got a spare 90 minutes and it's still up there, or 96 minutes, definitely worth watching.
No, very much so. Very much so. Yes, it's... I think for Yokohama FC as well, this was the first home game where they'd had singing allowed since the pandemic.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm not really sure why, but pretty much every other team in the league has had at least one home game with singing. Yeah, but it all added up to a cracking atmosphere, and yeah, it's definitely a really good, as we've said a few times, a really good advert for the league, I think. So yeah, good stuff. Okay, so yes, to clarify, James, Niigata promoted as champions, Yokohama FC promoted as runners-up. And Okayama will go into the playoffs at home in the first round because they're guaranteed to finish third. All right, that's all the positive stuff for now. James, we better turn our attention to the foot of the table, where, yeah, there was a really big result, wasn't there, at Shoda Stadium. It finished Gunma 5, Iwate 1, a result that means that Iwate's J2 adventure is over. They'll return to J3 after just one season in J2. And they'll be joined in the third tier by FC Ryukyu next year, while at Gunma, they survive, and in some style in this game. Shuto Kitagawa went close for Gunma at the near post early on, but he fired wide of the target. But he was on the score sheet in the 18th minute, converting a cross from Junya Kato from about 6 yards. In the rest of the first half, both sides had chances. For Iwate, Yohei Okayama headed wide from a corner when I think he perhaps should have done better. And Kenneth Ottobor had a goal disallowed, correctly, I think, for an offside in the build-up. At the other end, in first half stoppage time, Iwate's keeper Kenta Matsuyama made a good save at the feet of Gunma's impressive rookie forward Motoki Nagakura. And the game was pretty much decided by 4 crazy minutes around the hour mark. In the 57th minute, Gunma doubled their lead when Hiroto Hatao knocked down a corner for Junya Kato to sweep in unmarked. 3 minutes after that, though, Iwate reduced the deficit when half-time substitute Cristiano headed in a deep free kick from Taisuke Nakamura. So 2-1 to the hosts Gunma at that point. Less than 60 seconds later, though, it was 3-1. As Nagakura outpaced the Iwate backline down Gunma's right, including Iwate centre-back Yusuke Muto, who I think pulled his hamstring when he came across to challenge Nagakura. He had to go off and be substituted after this. Nagakura made his way into the penalty area and brilliantly chipped Matsuyama and put the ball into the net for 3-1. And the floodgates opened after that. I think Iwate realised the game was literally up for them, wasn't it? Hatao headed in a corner to make it 4-1. And even Shu Hinamatsu scored for Gunma. He rifled in a drive from just inside the penalty area. So it was 5-1 at full time. Gunma 5, Iwate 1. And it was announced pretty quickly, I think after the game, that Iwate's boss, Yuta Akita, he's going to leave the club now at the end of this season after 3 years in charge. So, James... Gunma usually on the end of 5 and 6 goal beatings this season, that they got the chance to hand one out, and it was a result that relegated Iwate and Ryukyu and ensures that Gunma will be back in J2 for next season. So yeah, Gunma 5, Iwate 1. What did you think?
Yeah, well, this was the joint worst attack against the worst defense in J2. So which would prevail? We got a pretty emphatic answer, didn't we? Iwate's worst defense was worse than Gunma's joint worst attack. I think Iwate, they collapsed at the worst possible time, didn't they? And what was interesting in this one, because before the game, of course, with their positions in the table, Gunma knew that the onus was on Iwate to take the game to them. But Iwate didn't really do that. Gunma controlled the first half, really. And they took the lead. 1-0 up at half time. And then in the second half, there was, and yet there was 5 goals in 17 minutes. It was really unexpected. You don't expect that from these two teams, to be honest. Although maybe you would expect Iwate to concede quite a few because of their defensive record. But I thought, Iwate really let themselves down in this one. I mean, the Gunma's third goal was a really good goal, really nice, well taken by Nagakura, who I thought played very well. He had a few chances where he could have had a couple of goals, but he was impressive but he shouldn't have got to that ball. Yusuke Muta was so casual, just jogging towards it, and by the time he realised that Nagakura was sprinting past him, I thought he rolled his ankle or something. He injured himself somehow, so he couldn't get a tackle in, and Nagakura was able to go in and score. And to do that at any time is pretty poor, but to do it straight from the kickoff, immediately after getting back into a game that you have to win in order to keep alive your hopes, slim hopes of survival, is unforgivable. It was absolutely dreadful. And it was literally straight from the kickoff. What was it? They kicked off, one pass, another pass, and a long ball downfield. It was just ridiculous. And then apart from that, from Muta, I thought Kentaro Kai and I think it was Hayata Komats were directly implicated in several of the goals. The two from set pieces, either they lost their man or they didn't follow someone they were supposed to follow, or they did follow someone but it wasn't who they were supposed to follow and they left someone unmarked, or they were just out jumped by someone. But yeah, and then the last goal was a very good strike from Hiramatsu, but it was because Kai just sort of chested the ball up to him on the edge of the area or something. It just completely forgot how to use his body to control a football. A fantastic result for Gunma. Emphatic win. Surviving like this with this kind of performance to secure it is got to feel good, isn't it? For Iwate, yeah, they gave it a go, didn't they, this year, but their squad wasn't good enough. And the team selection didn't really allow for any consistency, which I think, I know Sean Carroll wrote an interesting article earlier in the year comparing Iwate's team selections with Kumamoto's team selections. Kumamoto sticking with mostly an unchanged team and doing really well. Iwate changing, making wholesale changes almost every week and not doing very well. I think it's fair to say these two teams, Gunma and Iwate, finished where they deserved to finish. Iwate, 14 times they conceded 3 goals or more in a game. 3 times they conceded 5. I mean, you can't do that and expect to stay up, really, can you? I mean, Gunma weren't much better. And so they're surviving by the skin of their teeth again. But as we always say when we talk about Gunma, that's all they seem to be aimed for. I mean, where do they go from here, really? What do you think?
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, the celebrations at the final whistle at Shoda kind of told you that the Gunma fans are obviously very happy to survive in J2 for another year. But yeah, I think existentially it does make you think, what is the kind of long-term kind of goal for Gunma? Because they never seem to be much higher than like the bottom sort of 5 or 6 in J2. I don't have their kind of league positions in front of me, but they don't do much higher than that. And yeah, it does make you wonder, you know, you're only ever going to be one bad season away from being relegated, right? Like they were not too long ago and then came back. So yeah, I'm not really sure. I mean, obviously the immediate focus right now is kind of pats on the back for getting out of a very sort of sticky situation where they, I think you're exactly right that I think Ryukyu and Iwate have been worse than Gunma. So I think, you know, Gunma de facto deserve to survive, but they've not been very good. I mean, I think, was it 5-1 against Kumamoto they lost the previous round or two rounds ago?
And then 6-1 against Yamaguchi.
Yeah, so in those games, like in the Kumamoto game, it felt like there was a division between them. And that's fair enough because Kumamoto are pushing sort of J1 level at home in a lot of games this season, you know, in terms of kind of playoff potential. To be beaten 6-1 at home by Yamaguchi and to have it look like there's a division between you and Yamaguchi is a bit worrying because Yamaguchi are no slouches, but they're very much a mid-table J2 side, I think. In this game it was kind of the same, except this time it was Gunma being the team from a kind of the higher division, it felt like. You know, handing out a beating to a team that perhaps belongs in J3. I think you mentioned Yusuke Muta and Kentaro Kai, and I think another centre back's been used a lot, which is Issei Tone from Toyama. They're all like J3 level players for me, and I don't mean that to sound like very harsh, but I'm not really sure why there was so much confidence that they could do a job in J2. For Iwate, I think in goal, I don't have anything against Taishi Brandon Nozawa, the kind of teenage goalkeeper they had on loan from FC Tokyo, but it became obvious, I think, that he was a bit hit or miss, but they just stuck with him for absolutely ages before bringing back Kenta Matsuyama in goal, who I think might not... Nozawa has so much potential that he might turn out to be a much better keeper than Matsuyama in time, but not right now. I just don't think Iwate with the kind of, it's been interesting to watch them, but they just haven't squeezed enough out of players like Morelato, Brenner, Cristiano, who's come in as a kind of like, you know, in emergency break glass, you know, Brazilian signing towards the end of the season. So yeah, I don't think they can have any complaints about being relegated. I'm sad to see them go, just like I'm sad to see Riku go, because at times I think I've probably, if I had the pick of which teams to watch, I might have picked those two over Gunma a lot of the time this season, as you mentioned, for being like the lowest scorers. So, it's a good illustration of where I think Iwate and Riku have perhaps been more entertaining to watch. They've not been as effective, and Iwate certainly not very effective on Sunday against Gunma. So, yeah, I don't think they can have too many complaints. And I suppose Riku have changed manager as well. They've announced that Nacho Fernandez is leaving, so it's going to be a clean sweep, I think, at Iwate and Ryukyu for next year. And Gunma, yeah, I don't know. Will they stick with Otsuki as the manager for next year? Because he, judging by the celebrations at the final wishes, it was kind of mission accomplished, right, to stay in J2. So if the front office is happy, maybe they go again with him in charge next year, and we'll see. But, Gunma's kind of long-term... The long-term prognosis for me is they look destined to be like a yo-yo team at the moment. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, I think they should enjoy the moment for now, because it's been a long old slog of a season, and they were able to kind of round off their home campaign with a resounding victory and secure their survival. So yeah, well done to them, and commiserations to Iwate and to Ryukyu. But don't worry, you get to be analysed by Mike Innes next season. That is no small consolation, I feel. So yes, we'll see. All right, James, all good stuff. I think if we're okay, we can take a quick break. I'll round up the rest of the round 41 games from J2 solo, and then yes, we'll be back together, and you can give me a hand looking ahead to the final round 42 this Sunday. Hi again, everyone. John here, rounding up the rest of the round 41 J2 action. Now, as discussed with James, Niigata are champions because Yokohama FC lost against Kanazawa, but they missed the chance to win the title under their own steam as they lost 1-0 at Tokyo Verdy on Saturday afternoon. The vital goal came just before the hour from Itsuki Somino, as Niigata made a mess of clearing a Verdy corner, Somino beat Niigata goalie Ryosuke Kojima to the ball in the air, and when it dropped into the 6-yard box, it fell nicely for him to score from close range. Before that, at the other end, Verdy's Brazilian goalkeeper Matias had made a good save with his legs from a Soya Fujiwara header, and it finished Tokyo Verdy 1, Niigata 0. Verdy are ending the season in thrilling fashion. This was their fifth straight win. Niigata probably won't be too worried about this game given the circumstances, and congratulations again to them on winning the J2 title. Kumamoto are still fourth, but they lost for the second time in three matches, 2-1 at Sendai, who picked up their first win in six games thanks to a 92nd minute winner from Ferginho. Akira Ito's men are seventh, level on points with sixth place Tokushima in the playoff tussle. Sendai absolutely had to win this game, and they started off like a freight train. Kumamoto goalie Yuya Sato had to make a smart save from Masato Nakayama in just the second minute, but that was only a temporary reprieve because in the fourth minute, big Sendai defender Koji Hachitsuka strode over the halfway line and played a perfect through ball to Keimen Togashi, who squeezed the ball past Sato's right hand and into the bottom corner to make it 1-0 to the hosts. It was nearly 2-0 minutes later when Ferginho stole the ball from Kumamoto on the edge of their own penalty area. He dribbled into the box but took too long to get his shot away and ended up putting the chance wide. It seemed like the visitors would end the game with a point when they equalised 15 minutes from the end of the game. A corner from So Kawahara was headed goalwards by big centre-back Masahiro Sugata, and Sendai forward Nakayama accidentally diverted it past his own goalkeeper while he was trying to head the ball clear. The last 10 minutes were end-to-end stuff. For Kumamoto, Kawahara was inches away from connecting with a low cross from Tales that could have put his team in front. And at the other end, Motohiko Nakajima rattled the Kumamoto crossbar with a fine strike from about 25 yards. But then, in the 92nd minute, a perfectly flighted corner from Yasushi Endo was headed in by Ferginho for a winner that almost lifted the roof off the Yurtec Stadium and kept Sendai very much alive in the playoff race. Final score, Sendai 2, Kumamoto 1. Oita Trinita are guaranteed to finish at least 5th, but they were beaten 3-0 at home by playoff-chasing Yamagata, and it wasn't a great afternoon for Oita's goalkeeper, Shun Yoshida. Yamagata were out of the blocks quickly, with Yoshida having to block from Ayumu Kawai early on, and moments later there was a miss of the season contender from Taiki Kato as he put a great ball from Riku Handa wide of the far post. The visitors, Yamagata, eventually took the lead right at the end of the first half in the 5th minute of stoppage time when Akira Disaro looped a header over Yoshida from Kawai's cross after Oita had only half cleared a Yamagata corner. So 1-0 to Yamagata at half-time, and early in the second half, a bad mistake from Yoshida handed Yamagata their second goal. Oita centre-back Pereira headed a long ball back to Yoshida, so there shouldn't have been any danger whatsoever, but Pereira hadn't realised that Yoshida had inexplicably come about 50 yards off his goal line to deal with the ball himself, so Pereira ended up heading the ball over his goalkeeper and into an empty net. Disaro followed the ball in and tried to claim the goal, but an own goal was the official verdict, and the scoreline was glossed with a third Yamagata goal in second half stoppage time. Oita goalkeeper Yoshida, not a man whose confidence is easily dented. He tried to be clever in possession near the edge of his own penalty area, but he just about managed to present the ball straight to Yamagata striker De La Torre, and the ball was worked across the box for Thiago Alves to pass into the empty net to make the final score, Oita 0, Yamagata 3. Dear oh dear, what was Yoshida doing? Plenty for Oita to ponder as they prepare for the postseason playoffs then, and Yamagata could still join them in the top 6. They are 1 point adrift in 8th place at the moment. In 6th place at the moment are Tokushima, with 1 game left to play. They're level on points with Sendai, but ahead on goal difference. Tokushima were too strong for Omiya at the weekend, winning 3-1 at the Pokhari Sweat Stadium, with Shota Fujio scoring twice in the second half. The first period was pretty much one-way traffic for the home side, and they led 1-0 at the break thanks to a goal from Akira Hamashita. Omiya centre-back Yutaro Hakamata headed the ball against a teammate while trying to clear a cross, and the ball dropped kindly for Hamashita to sweep home from about 6 yards. So 1-0 to Tokushima at the break, but Omiya came out swinging in the second half. Takamitsu Tomiyama went close to an equaliser with a near post header that went over the crossbar. And then the Squirrels drew level in the 49th minute from a well-worked corner kick. Masato Kojima put in a low shot that was deflected into the net off Tomiyama, who seemed to be in an offside position standing in front of the goalkeeper, but the goal was given and it was 1-1. Omiya then nearly went ahead with Seiya Nakano volleying just wide of Jose Suarez's right-hand post. But Tokushima took the game away from the visitors with two headers from Fujio in the space of 6 minutes. In the 63rd minute, a nice run and cross from Hamashita down the Tokushima right led to Fujio powering in a free header from 10 yards. Then in the 69th minute, Fujio headed in another right-wing cross, this time from El Sino. And it was nearly 4-1 before full-time thanks to another header, but an effort from Kazunari Ichimi came back off the post. So the final score, impressive Tokushima 3 and their already safe Omiya 1. FC Ryukyu's relegation to J3 was confirmed by Gunma's thrashing of Iwate, as I discussed with James earlier, but Ryukyu themselves lost 2-1 away at Jeff Chiba on Sunday. Ryukyu started well and took the lead in the 17th minute, Ryunosuke Noda heading in a fine left-wing cross from Takayuki Fukumura. But Jeff levelled in first-half stoppage time from an unlikely source, Andrew Kumagai putting in a drive from the edge of the penalty area after Toshiyuki Takagi had laid the ball back to him. This game looked like it was drifting towards being a 1-1 draw, but Jeff grabbed the winner on the counter-attack just 4 minutes from full-time. A Ryukyu corner was cleared to launch Jeff's breakaway, which ended with Thiago De Leonso one-on-one with the last Ryukyu defender. Thiago was able to make space for a shot quite easily and beat Danny Carvajal in the Ryukyu goal to make it 2-1. So full-time score, Jeff Chiba 2, Ryukyu 1. Ryukyu have already announced the departure of their manager, Nacho Fernandez, at the end of this season, so they'll have a clean slate as they start J3 life next year. Jeff, who seems set to finish around 10th in the table, will also have a new manager for next season, so this was Yoon Jong-kwan's final home game in charge. VFR in Nagasaki ended their home campaign for 2022 with a 1-0 defeat against Yamaguchi. Wataru Tanaka scored Yamaguchi's goal in the 16th minute, side-footing home a volley from Kento Hashimoto's corner. Tanaka was unmarked about 12 yards from goal for the finish. Nagasaki's best chance of an equaliser was a header from Kazuki Kushibiki that was brilliantly kept out by Kento Oseki in the Yamaguchi goal, and the final score was Nagasaki 0, Yamaguchi 1. Nagasaki are going to finish around 11th this season, with Yamaguchi a little bit below them in lower mid-table. Elsewhere, there was carnage at the Kanseki Stadium, where Mito came back from 2 goals down to win 3-2 against Hotsu Tochigi, and both sides ended up with 10 men. This was one of those J2 games that basically defies analysis, so bear with me. Tochigi were 2-0 up and cruising after half an hour, thanks to goals from Carlos Gutierrez and Hayato Kurosaki. Gutierrez swept in a loose ball from about 14 yards after Mito couldn't clear a Tochigi free kick, and Kurosaki scored a goal of the month contender, cutting in from the right flank and bending a beautiful left-footed shot past Luis Yamaguchi in the Mito goal. Mito pulled a goal back in first half stoppage time though. A dangerous low cross from Naoki Tsubaki out on the left was cleared against Korsuke Kinoshita by a Tochigi defender, and it ended up going over the line via a combination of Kinoshita and Tochigi keeper Shuhei Kawata. And then, as the second half got underway in the 48th minute, the red card was brandished twice, once for each team, as Gutierrez tangled with Mito forward Mizuki Ando near the halfway line. With their legs tangled together, Ando clearly kicked out at Gutierrez for a deserved sending off. While Gutierrez was perhaps a little bit unlucky to see red, unless the referee was punishing for his frankly appalling play acting, I would have given him a red card just for that. But yeah, both sides down to 10 men. And then late drama handed Mito the points in this game. In the 87th minute, Tochigi forward Ko Miyazaki was harshly penalised for a handball in his own penalty area. Mito substitute Shoji Toyama stepped up to confidently score the spot kick to make it 2-2. And things got even better for Tadahiro Akiba's men in the 96th minute, with Mito having a last gasp corner. Even Mito's goalkeeper Yamaguchi came up to join the attack, but when his opposite number Kawata came to claim the ball and spilled it, it dropped nicely for Toyama to rifle in a stunning winner. So brilliant entertainment, and the final score was Tochigi 2, Mito 3. And finally, in the rearranged Wednesday night game, Emperor's Cup winners Kofu made lots of changes to their starting lineup for their game away at Machida, but ended up winning 2-1 anyway. This game sprang to life near the end of the first half when a long goal kick from Kofu's goalkeeper Kohei Kawata was gathered by Willian Lira inside the Machida penalty area, and he laid the ball off for Igor to rifle in a fierce shot off the underside of the crossbar from just outside the box. Fantastic strike to put Kofu 1-0 ahead. And this, I'd miss this, but Igor is the son of a legendary J-League striker, Alcindo, so I'm sure he would have enjoyed seeing his son score that cracking goal as well. Machida had the perfect chance to level just before half-time from the penalty spot when Kofu's Nagi Matsumoto clumsily felled Reo Takai just as a corner was being delivered into the Kofu box. Takai took the penalty himself, but smashed it against the crossbar and Kofu escaped. So Kofu were 1-0 up at the break. In the second half, Kofu had the ball in the net again, but the goal was correctly ruled out for a foul in the build-up. At the other end, Taiki Hirato somehow shot straight at Kawata with the goal at his mercy inside the 6-yard box. Not sure what happened with that chance. It looked, though, as though Machida had secured a point when they equalised in the 85th minute. Shusuke Ota's cross from the left was inch perfect for Chong Teze to head in for 1-1. But there was one more twist to come, and in the 5th minute of stoppage time, a clever chip from Niki Urakami set Matsumoto free inside the match penalty area on the right, and his cross was headed in by Willian Lira from about 10 yards to make the final score Machida 1, Kofu 2. So, a happy ending to a strange old season for Kofu and their departing boss Tatsuma Yoshida, and a not-so-happy ending for Machida and their departing manager Ranko Popovic. Okay, that's all the J2 action covered, I think, so please stay tuned. In a moment, I'll be back with James. We're going to look ahead to the final round, round 42 fixtures, coming up on Sunday afternoon. J2 Extra Time. Welcome back, everyone. John Steele here again with James, and we're going to run through the round 42 fixtures, the final round of the J2 marathon coming up this weekend. So, all the games are on Sunday, October the 23rd, with synchronised kickoff times. It's going to be 2 p.m. for all of these games. Now, James, I've had a go at working out all the permutations of these fixtures, but please let me know if I've missed anything. Some maths was involved. So there's every possibility that there are errors involved as well, where I'm concerned. So Niigata, they have a home game to celebrate their title win. They host Machida, with Yokohama FC promoted in second place. They go to fourth place Kumamoto, who need a win to be certain of finishing fourth and having home advantage in the first round of the playoffs. Okayama, who are guaranteed to finish third and to have a home game in the playoffs first round, they end their regular season away at Tokyo Verdy. Now, fifth-placed Oita, they could snatch fourth place from Kumamoto if they win their game at relegated Ryukyu and Kumamoto slip up somehow at home to Yokohama FC. So there's a battle for fourth and fifth place between Kumamoto and Oita. Elsewhere, also relegated Iwate, they'll bow out of J2 with an away game at the newly crowned Emperor's Cup champions Kofu. Sure to be a memorable day for both clubs, you'd imagine. Gunma can celebrate their survival with a free pass at an away game at Mito, and Omiya will welcome Nagasaki to the NAC 5 stadium in Saitama. In other matches, Kanazawa will host Tochigi, and the Yoon Jong-kwan era at Jeff United will come to a close with a game away at Yamaguchi. Now, I think most of the interest is going to be on the other two games, James. The battle for sixth place. Now, Tokushima are sixth at the moment. They will finish sixth if they can win away at eighth place Yamagata. But any other result could see seventh place Sendai or Yamagata themselves end up in the playoffs. And by the way, Sendai go to their Tohoku neighbours and currently bang in form Akita on the final day. So the games to watch are Yamagata against Tokushima and Akita against Sendai. Here comes the part I'm least confident about, James. If Tokushima win, they're in the playoffs. If Tokushima draw and Sendai win, Sendai will finish sixth and be in the playoffs. If Tokushima lose and Sendai don't win, so if Yamagata beat Tokushima and Sendai don't beat Akita, then Yamagata will finish sixth and end up in the playoffs. So there's a chance, you know, all three of these teams have got a chance of kind of sneaking in to the playoffs on the last day. James, I think I know what you're going to say, but where should we be? Where should we be focused?
Yeah, Mito against Gunma. those games for the battle for sixth. I think it's also worth pointing out that Tokushima and Sendai, they're both on 62 points, but Tokushima have a goal difference of 16, and Sendai have a goal difference of 8, which is why Tokushima are currently above them in the table. And Yamagata on 61 points have a goal difference of 19. I don't know if the goal difference will come into play, but it could be interesting. What's also interesting is Kumamoto and Oita currently have the same goal difference of 11. But yeah, those the Akita Sendai, Yamagata Tokushima, and then Kumamoto Yokohama FC and Ryukyu Oita are the games that I've picked out as being the only important ones. I mean, it'll be nice for Niigata to have a party at home. It'll be nice for Kofu to have a party at home, having just won for the first time in ages in J2. apart from that, I mean, yeah, Okayama will want to try and go into the playoffs with a win against Verdy, who are also bang in form and really only just missing out on the playoffs themselves. And then you've got other teams who want to like send their managers off. You know, Mito, it's last game for their manager. Iwate is the last game for their manager. Machida, Jeff, Ryukyu, all teams that, whose managers have been confirmed publicly as leaving. So, I mean, in those cases, it's more like professional pride that they're playing for. But in the playoff battle, there are four games that we should focus on, and I think, I mean, it's annoying that they're all at the same time, but that kind of adds to the drama, I suppose. But yeah, if possible to keep an eye on more than one, then definitely do it.
Mm-hmm. What's your gut feeling about how it's going to go, James? I mean, for me. I think Kumamoto will probably end up. They've been fourth for so long; it's kind of hard to imagine that they would lose their grip on that on the last day. So I think it'd probably be Kumamoto fourth and Oita fifth, won't it? And then what do you think about that? And who's going to finish?
Well,
sixth?
Yeah, with fourth and fifth, I mean Oita Ryukyu. Ryukyu, are they finally going to now that the now that they're confirmed as relegated, are they finally going to come out and play really well? Or are Oita just going to be able to roll them over, in which case? I mean, I can't imagine that Yokohama FC will put in the kind of insipid first half performance that they did the other day again. So I think that might not be as cut and dry as it seems. But with sixth, I think Tokushima will keep sixth, mainly because they're already in sixth and because they are pretty good at not losing. And Sendai finally won, didn't they, the other day for the first time in a while, a quite dramatic fashion. They're going to take a lot of supporters to Akita. I think the away section sold out ages ago for that game. But we know Akita are in form and they'll want to go out on a high. Like I said already, they're quite good at playing the spoiler. They just derailed Okayama slightly. I think they'll look to try and do the same to Sendai. Yamagata, they've got to beat Tokushima. Like I just said, Tokushima don't lose much, do they? So I think Tokushima are probably going to hang on to sixth, but I'm not going to put my house on it or anything. I mean, I don't own my own house, but that's another reason why I wouldn't put my house on it.
Well, I think, I mean, I was looking at the table, and it's worth repeating, like, Tokushima have only lost 5 games out of 41. It's kind of incredible. So it's hard for me to imagine they're going to lose this game at Yamagata. However, they could draw. We know they like a draw. So that could let Sendai in if they can get the job done away at Akita, which again is really quite a big question, isn't it, with the way Akita have been playing and the way Sendai have been playing. On form, you'd expect maybe Akita would win that game. So I think Tokushima are going to get something from the Yamagata game. So I think that puts Yamagata out of the picture, unfortunately. So I think it probably is between Tokushima and Sendai, and it will come down to can Sendai get the job done against Akita. I mean, they haven't really looked, you know, very impressive at all under Akirito since he's come in, so they have to play well to get the result against Akita. But I think my gut feeling is you're probably right, and it's going to be Tokushima that get it, and I think that's fair enough. I think they deserve it, but Sendai have been in the top six for so long this season. Obviously, they've slowly slipped out of it over the last couple of months as their form has just completely nosedived. But I don't think they're out of it just yet. And I think it's not beyond the realms of possibility. They could win, you know, they could beat Akita. And then the pressure is on Tokushima, isn't it, to make sure they win their match. And I'm not sure about Tokushima winning away at Yamagata. I think a draw is probably the most likely result there. So there is a route for Sendai to get in, but I think that's where I think, you know, yeah, it's interesting to see who's going to finish fourth, Kumamoto, Oita, but I think that the real money, you know, the real excitement is going to be that, yes, Yamagata, Tokushima, and Akita against Sendai, I think. Yeah, we agree. James, on that note, I think it's past both our bedtimes here, so we'll say goodbye to the listeners for now, I think. But as usual, please stay tuned, because in a moment, Mike Innes is going to be along, Magic Mike Innes. He's got all the J3 news for us in a J-Talk short corner. And we'd like to say thanks as well for the whole season to anyone who's been downloading the pod and listening, subscribing or supporting us and the big J-Talk podcast on Patreon. We really appreciate that. Yeah, you'll hear all the latest J3 news with Magic Mike Innes in the short corner.
J-Talk Extra Time. Hello everyone, and welcome to J-Talk Short Corner, the mini-pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J-League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode I'll be looking back on fixtures in Round 29, as well as previewing the Round 30 matches coming up this weekend. First, a few items of J3 news since the last pod. The J-League have announced the winners of the Player, Coach and Goal of the Month awards for September. The first two reflect Fujiedo MyFC's continued good form, as goalkeeper Kei Uchiyama takes the Player Prize and Daisuke Sudo is named Coach of the Month after the team picked up 14 points from their 6 September matches. The goal choice is Loris Tinelli's brilliant individual effort for YSCC Yokohama against Matsumoto Yamaga in round 26. Congratulations to all concerned. And as covered on JTET, looking ahead to next year, we now know that FC Ryukyu and Iwate Gruja Morioka will be returning from J2 to J3. Ryukyu for the first time since 2018, Iwate after just a single season in the higher division. Gruja already know they'll be playing under a new coach, as Yutaka Akita will be stepping down. And speaking of coaches, Gainare Tottori have confirmed Kim Jong-song will be staying on to lead the team in 2023. Now onto the action, and round 29 kicked off with 2 games on Saturday the 15th of October, both involving teams with promotion aspirations. One of the division's form sides, FC Imabari, went to bottom-placed YSCC Yokohama, but we'll begin this week with Matsumoto Yamaga's home match against FC Gifu. Big guns Yamaga having slipped out of the top placings with an ill-timed run of poor form. And there was further bad news for Hiroshi Nanami's men in the 27th minute when they failed to clear a Ryo Kubota corner, giving Junki Hata the chance to fire into the roof of the net. But Yuji Yokoyama's Gifu, dealing with a coronavirus outbreak in the squad, which presumably explains why they named two goalkeepers among their subs, have the third weakest defence in the division, and that frailty proved decisive here, as just after the restart, Matsumoto's ex-Gifu winger Paolo Junichi Tanaka received a pass from Lukao, easily stepped away from Hennick and beat keeper Takuya Matsumoto at his near post. Then, with 19 minutes left, Masato Tokida sent a high cross into the visiting penalty area. Tanaka swung a hopeful foot at it, and Matsumoto and his defender Kazuya Okamura got in each other's way, somehow allowing the ball to slip over the line. Gifu sub Ayumu Matsumoto drew a good save from Victor with a brave header in the late stages, but it ended Matsumoto 2, Gifu 1, a lifeline for Yamaga, who win for the first time in 4. Gifu, meanwhile, haven't tasted victory in 7. Over at Mitsuzawa, Imabari went into their game at YSCC on a run of 4 straight wins to move within 6 points of the promotion spots. But a nightmare last quarter hour of the first half struck a hammer blow to Imabari's slim hopes of playing J2 football next season. YSCC, as last week against Kagoshima United, put in a strong showing and took a deserved lead in the 30th minute, keeping the pressure on after a half-cleared corner, the ball coming to Ryotaro Yamamoto, who glanced up and blasted it inside the far post from 25 yards. Pressing forwards, Imabari looked vulnerable to the counter-attacking combination of Loris Tinelli and Shuntaro Kawabe, who brought a one-on-one save out of Shu Mogi. And with 5 minutes to go before half-time, Tinelli again fed his teammate, Kawabe, getting away from Hayato Teruyama and beating Mogi with a low-angled shot. Despite their best efforts, Imabari weren't able to pull one back until 15 minutes from time, inevitably through Kanta Chiba, who, 20 yards from goal, received a pass from Kazuki Okayama, flicked it up, controlled it on his thigh, and casually volleyed it into the bottom corner. A welcome display of panache, certainly, but Kazuaki Hashikawa's team couldn't push on from there. Final score, YSCC 2, Imabari 1. Signs of late season improvement for YSCC, while for Imabari, that may be the realistic end of their promotion hopes for this year. The other 7 matches were on Sunday the 16th, when leaders Iwaki FC travelled to Azul Claro Numazu and brushed aside the challenge of the hosts. Rookie striker Ryo Arita scored twice to bring his goal tally to 7 in the last 4 games for the champions-elect. Arita's first put Iwaki in front on 18 minutes, the simplest of tap-ins after homekeeper Hiromu Musha couldn't hold on to Hiroto Iwabuchi's toe-poked shot. The game was then decided by 3 more Iwaki goals in 13 second-half minutes. Daigo Furukawa heading home Eiji Miyamoto's looping cross. Iwabuchi's pass splitting open the defence for Arita to finish past Musha. And finally, an Iwabuchi corner glanced in by defender Ryo Endo. Otherwise, Iwaki hit the woodwork twice and had a clear penalty ignored. The home side rarely threatened. Final score, Numazu 0, Iwaki 4. Azul Claro have now scored 5 goals in 13 matches since Ryo Watanabe left. Iwaki, here simply at a different level. For their home derby against Tegevajaro Miyazaki, second-placed Kagoshima United were without suspended captain and centre-back Kenta Hidose, and the last time he was missing, his team crashed 6-0 at Gainare Tottori. 15 minutes into this match, Kagoshima lost talismanic forward Rei Yonezawa to injury, but they did take the lead in fine style 10 minutes later, a sweeping move ending in Atsushi Satsukawa crossing low to the near post for Shuto Nakahara to provide an elegant finish. But Tegevajaro were prepared to commit players forward and to attack with pace. On the hour, a pitch-perfect ball over the top by Yudai Tokunaga exposed the right-hand side of the home defence, where Kenta Okuma beat Yuto Kide to score past Fuma Shirasaka. 11 minutes later, Kide's fluffed pass in midfield enabled Tomoya Kitamura to release Kairi Shinbo, who advanced on goal and beat Shirasaka at his far post. Just when Kagoshima could not afford to make mistakes, they threw away the lead to their local rivals. Kenya Onodera had a late equaliser ruled out for offside, and so it ended Kagoshima 1, Miyazaki 2, a major setback to the Smoking Volcano's hopes of a return to J2, the whiff of a well-executed plan by Yasushi Takasaki's Tegevajaro. Which brings us on to the game of the round, fifth against third, Katare Toyama against Fujieda My FC. Toyama still retained some hope of making the top two under new coach Michiharu Otagiri and boasted one of the best home records in the division. Fujieda were looking increasingly assured of their place among the J3 elite, but came into a tough fixture without suspended forward Ryo Watanabe. But what a display My FC put on for their small band of travelling fans, having the better of the first half and taking the lead in the 40th minute when Jun Suzuki headed a loose ball to Tojiro Kubo, who held off the challenge of Yuma Matsumoto, turned and fired a low shot of some ferocity into the bottom corner. And just before the break, Fujieda went two up, Ekiyuki Yokoyama prompting a run by Ryota Iwabuchi, who evaded Makoto Rindo and beat Genki Yamada at the near post. Things were to get even better for Daisuke Sudo's team immediately after the restart, when on the counter-attack, Yokoyama combined with Masahiko Sugita to set up Iwabuchi, who clipped a composed finish beyond Yamada for 3-0. The home defence simply couldn't keep pace with Fujieda's incisive attacking play, a point underlined when 3 became 4 in the 62nd minute, when Yokoyama picked up a lucky rebound in midfield and fed Sugita, who left Ryuya Ohata for dead before firing in from 15 yards. Katare at least registered a consolation in injury time through Nobuyuki Shina's clever first-time volley, but an extraordinary game ended Toyama 1, Fujieda 4. Humiliation for Katare, but outstanding by My FC. Whatever happens at the end of this season, it's hard to see Sudo coaching in J3 next year. Four more matches to run through now. SC Sagamihana tumbling to second bottom in the table after their defeat at mid-table AC Nagano Paseiro. This was a game that started with a bang as inside the first 90 seconds, Sagamihana's stand-in keeper Takahiro Shibasaki took a long goal kick that Paseiro's Yuki Morikawa headed back for Hiroki Yamamoto to shoulder Jiro Kamata off the ball and finish past Shibasaki. But Sagamihana were level within a minute, an exquisite Jungo Fujimoto ball setting up the chance for Tsubasa Ando to send in a low cross that Daiichi Inui somehow failed to block, leaving Takeyuki Funayama with a tap-in for his third of the season. Inui made amends just before half-time, putting Nagano back in front when he poked home the loose ball after Shibasaki had parried Yamamoto's header from a corner kick. And in the 47th minute, Paseiro went further ahead. Hayate Sugi's cutback met by Leo Yamanaka with a first-time left-footer that flew into the corner. Morikawa and Masaki Miyasaka both hit the post as the home side pushed for a fourth, but it ended Nagano 3, Sagamihara 1. Comfortable for Paseiro, who looks set to see out the season in 7th. 5 straight defeats for Sagamihara, for whom 2022 can't end soon enough. And in the standings, Sagamihara moved below Kamatamari Sanuki as a result of the Noodle Boys' first victory since round 15, taking all 3 points at Fukushima United. 5 minutes before half-time, Fukushima did have a goal disallowed, Yuta Nobe straying offside as he finished Junya Takahashi's through pass. But 3 minutes into the second half, it was Kamatamari who opened the scoring, the home defence standing off Takuma Goto, giving him plenty of time to steady himself and score from 20 yards for his first pro goal. Sanuki remained on the front foot and in the 63rd minute took a rare 2-goal lead, Hayato Hasegawa's powerfully struck cross being deflected into his own net by Makoto Kawanishi. The best Fukushima could then do was a couple of half chances in the closing moments through substitutes Ibrahim Junior Kuribara and Naoya Seita. Final score, Fukushima 0, Sanuki 2. Fukushima's season rather in danger of drifting away from them. A welcome success for hard-working Kamatamare. There was only one goal in it at Gainare Tottori against Vanrare Hachinohe, and that took place midway through the second half when the visitors Ryusei Nose cut it back from the byline for Takeru Itakura, whose low shot from the edge of the area seemed to go straight through Gainare keeper Ken Tajiri. Aoi Sato had earlier missed a great chance for Hachinohe, skying his shot when through on goal, and late on, Vanrare had defender Masanobu Komaki sent off for a second bookable offence, shortly before Kazuki Hattori produced a smart save to keep out Gainare's best chance, a close-range effort from Ryusei Takao. Final score, Tottori 0, Hachinohe 1. 3 straight losses for Gainare, who slip back down into the bottom 4. 4 wins in 5 for Vanrare, up to a season's high 13th. Finally, Ehime FC and Giravansi Kitakyushu played out a draw at the Ninjineer Stadium, in which Giravansi took a 36-minute lead through Ryo Sato, finishing well from Shun Hirayama's cross. Subsequently, the mighty Mikans found visiting keeper Yuki Kato in good form, but for the second consecutive week, they pulled level late on through Makoto Yoshida, a sweetly struck half-volley from Riki Matsuda's knockdown. Final score, Ehime 1, Kitakyushu 1. Kiyotaka Ishimaru's Ehime, competitive and entertaining as ever. Giravansi climbing to 10th off the back of a 3-game unbeaten run. So now to run through the top and bottom of the league standings after round 29, noting that Ehime and Miyazaki have a game in hand. The top 6 teams are Iwaki with 66 points, then it's Fujieda with 61, Kagoshima 59, Matsumoto 57, Toyama 54, and Imabari, 53. At the other end of the table, the bottom 4 are in 15th, Tottori with 28 points, then it's Sanuki with 24, Sagamihara, 23, and bottom with 21, YSCC. Just time now for a quick look ahead to the round 30 fixtures over the weekend, when there's just one game on Saturday the 22nd of October. Fujieda will look to continue their promotion push at home to Miyazaki. The other eight matches are on Sunday the 23rd. Leaders Iwaki play host to Ehime. The other main contenders have must-win away games: Kagoshima at Fukushima and Matsumoto at Imabari. Toyama will be trying to keep the flame alive as they venture to Hachinohe. Elsewhere, Nagano are at home to coach Yuki Stauff's former team YSCC. There's a big clash at the bottom of the table as Saneki host Sagamihana. It's Kitakyushu against Tottori, and Gifu are at home to Numazu. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say, thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.